if you have somebody who is depressed and you ask them to stay up all night, they will become manic. And if you have someone who is manic and you force them to get a lot of sleep, they will become depressed. And these symptoms of, oh, people who are depressed are sleeping more and people who are manic are sleeping less, started to not look like symptoms, but the causes. Both Light and the Fog hosts have mental illnesses, but it behaves quite differently, as Jenny explains in The Tides of Bipolar. Jenny is medicine-resistant type 2 bipolar, and it's all about the cycles. Not the moon or seasonal cycles, at least not in the way you think. Jenny brings the research that explains the circadian pacemaker running the bipolar show. Prepare to have your mind blown. Meanwhile, Trey's PTSD is more of a pattern, triggered more by random emotional shrapnel than a calendar. And we explore that stuff too.
Hello. Cheers, meow, meow.
Cheers, big meow, meow. Big full moon yesterday. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Meant to be all kinds of disruptive, but as we're learning, disruption is the path to creation. So we're excited about that potential.
Disruption is all part of the cycle, which is what we are here to talk about today, is cycles. So how fitting to be having our cycles conversation after the day after a disruptive full moon. Like, it's perfect. It's excellent.
It's perfect. It's as if we planned it.
It's as if, which is, I mean, it's kind of funny because we were originally supposed to record this sooner, but then things pushed it off, mm-hmm. and now it's getting recorded the day after the full moon. So maybe we didn't plan it, but maybe our higher selves did plan it. How exciting.
I love it. I believe it. I just roll with things, man. I just get pointed in a direction and I just go. So I've learned not to fight. Ish, mostly.
Ish. I'm still learning that battle for sure. But you know, it's what a wonderful battle to learn. Yay. So yeah.
Super fun. Feeling out of control of your person and your personality and your brain and everything else. Because cycles.
Cycles. I feel like, I don't know, you know, when it comes to the cycles of the self and cycles of our life, it does take a little bit to get control of that and understanding that we all run through cycles and that every year is just a repeating set of cycles for us. And I'm just now starting to understand that. So I feel like it's also kind of fitting for me to be doing this because I'm still like, I don't know what the heck is going on, but I kind of do a little bit.
Yeah, because the goal is not to stop the cycles. The goal is to understand the cycles well enough that you can manage them better and have them be less disruptive. Would you say that's fair to say?
Yeah, to learn how to ride the flow of it better and to learn, because like, especially as a writer, I feel the importance of cycles is really heavy for me, and the importance of understanding the cycles and leaning into it. And of course, you know, there's natural cycles that we can't stop that happen with our bodies. So why would we try and stop our mental cycles too? It just seems like it's all part of the flow. I think cycles are predictable and patterns are more attuned, you know, it's nurture versus nature almost, where it's like nature is the cycles and nurture is our patterns, you know, and nurture is part of us. But yeah, and I guess
that's awesome. And we'll do patterns some other time.
Yay, good. Yeah, okay,
let's talk cycles.
Yes, because obviously CPTSD, and then the rabbit hole I started going down was bipolar, because you know, you talked about having seasonal affective disorder, and people who are bipolar, it is a cycle for them. It's just a constant repeating cycle of mood swings. And I actually got information from my partner when I was having one of my bipolar episodes recently, and they told me something, and I was like, is this true? I need to find out. And I spent hours and hours and hours researching, not only to find that it is not only true, but there is empirical evidence and data that they have behind this. But what my friend said to me, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to unpack this. Okay, let's do it this way. So looking at bipolar in itself, just for a second, and I think we're going to use this as a bridge point to just talk about cycles in our internal clocks. How much do you know about how bipolar works, Trey?
I know I have a number of friends with it, but okay. I don't know a lot. So I would love it if you would break it
down. Yeah. So what I found out is it's pretty known that people who have bipolar will go through long periods of depression or long periods of mania and then flip. And when you have type 1 bipolar, it means that the manic periods are more destructive for you. And when you're type 2, like myself, it means the depressive periods are more destructive for you. And there's a lot more subcategories in that. But one of the well-known things with bipolar is that when you are depressed, you are sleeping a lot more. And when you're manic, you're sleeping a lot less. So there's actually a group of psychologists that were trying to understand how bipolar worked. And specifically this man named Tom Weher, W-E-H-R. He wanted to research rapid cycling bipolar, which means that someone who is rapid cycling bipolar, they have multiple episodes throughout the year, if you will. Normally with bipolar, there's about 2 shifts every year for people. If you're rapid cycling, that means you shift more than 2 times per year, which absolutely fits me. He did research, and rather than trying to understand, like trying to find a cause and research from there, what he did is he took participants who are bipolar rapid cycling, and they agreed to record all of their daily habits, everything, so that he could try and see if there is patterns that are repeating here that are causing these cycles. And what he found is that if you have somebody who is depressed and you ask them to stay up all night, they will become manic. And if you have someone who is manic and you force them to get a lot of sleep, they will become depressed. And these symptoms of, oh, people who are depressed are sleeping more and people who are manic are sleeping less, started to not look like symptoms, but the causes themselves. We've always thought they were symptoms, but in fact, they actually might be the causes. So it is now understood that people who are bipolar, their circadian rhythm is different. And that is what is causing some issues for them, is because their sleep patterns are cycling throughout the year. And so it's like, okay, that's kind of fascinating. And that's really, really intriguing to me. He wanted to go further, and he wanted to understand specifically what was causing these cycles in circadian rhythm switches for these people, because he could not find anything. There was nothing that would suggest in their daily lives that would be consistent throughout all the participants to change these cycles for them. And so he then came to understand that maybe instead it's an outside influence that's doing this. And so he was looking at all of these outside influences. And of course, there is the myth that the moon affects the shifts in moods in people, but there's not only no science to back that up. He looked into that, and the science was almost disproving that, that the cycles of the moon in terms of the lightness and the phase of the moon were not predictors for these people. But he still looked and he looked, and it took him 3 decades to find any sort of breakthrough on this until he finally came back to the moon. But he instead was like, what if it's not the cycles of the moon phases, but something else that the moon controls? And do you know what he found out, Trey? He found out that the people who have rapid cycling bipolar, their swings correspond pretty almost directly to the seasonal tides of the planet. So when the mania season seemed to correspond with the bimonthly spring tides, and then the depression would correspond with the bimonthly neap tides. And so to understand how this works, what he did, and I think this is going to be our bridge point, is he was looking into Why did that happen? And it's important to note that circadian rhythm, all it is, oh my gosh, I put it here perfectly. It's a pacemaker that's inside your, it's inside your internal body. All it is a pacemaker. And initially it's the sun that controls the circadian rhythm for us, where the sun, will be in the sky and we'll see the light and our body will tell us to be awake, and then in the darkness tell us to be asleep. The problem is people who are bipolar are known to stay up late and are known to sleep in late. So they're already distancing themselves from the natural circadian rhythms of the sun, which leaves them exposed to connecting with any of the Earth's other patterns, specifically the gravitational pull of the moon. And what he found is that it is not that the moon took over, it is that the circadian rhythms of the sun cycle and the moon cycle are constantly competing against each other. And the issue with that is the sun's day is 24 hours long. The moon's day is 24 hours and 50 minutes long. So each of the moon's days are progressively getting longer for people, which also made it to where people were getting up progressively later. And when you correspond those two together, what you find is it's a cycle of longer and longer nights until the spring tide rolls in, and then it's a cycle of shorter and shorter nights. And so it's actually the moon's gravitational pull working with the circadian rhythms of the sun that causes people who are bipolar or people with seasonal affective disorder to sleep more in the winter and to sleep less in the spring. And then enacts
Wow.
upon your yeah, because what my partner told me is that they recently are starting to come under to the understanding that the moon can affect bipolar disorder. And I was like, is that true? Like, am I sad because it's a full moon tonight? And the long answer is yes and no, but I don't know. I just think it's really fascinating to think that we have an internal clock that deals with our emotional regulation, and there is now evidence that suggests that the way the planet works affects that emotional regulation way more than we ever thought it did. Because there's also the
This
theory.
is all new information to me.
Good.
This is a step. My mind is being blown.
Well,
Because people make kind of faint connections between these
yes.
things, but to actually hear the science is fabulous.
Yeah, well, and there's even one guy, and they only called him Michael in this research. But there's even one guy where his depressive shifts lined up exactly with the tides, and it was crazy. And there's also always the theories that menstruation cycles used to line up with the moon phases better, and that the reason that that stopped is because of artificial light. And that
Right.
are, and so, I don't know. So that's the research that I found last night, and I don't know. I got really obsessed with it, and I thought it was really, 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 really interesting. And I'm going to post the links that I found this research on, an article that talks about this guy, as well as the actual study that this guy and somebody else released on this, using Michael as their test subject, to talk about cycles and whatnot.
How long ago did he come to these conclusions?
So this is throughout like 30 years of research. It started in the 70s. He didn't publish his study on it until 2018.
Wow. So this is an entire, so this alone is fascinating that somebody would be so fixated first off on a singular topic, and then because there's always concern as a scientist that if you go in with a theory, then everything you're going to do is going to be to prove the theory rather than disprove the theory.
Yes.
And it sounds like it's the opposite. It sounds like he was thwarted for 30 years that it that what he was trying to see as a connection, what he knew intuitively was a connection, and then finally things kind of broke through. It sounds like with this guy Michael, is that fair to
Yeah.
say?
Yeah, well, so the way it worked for Tom, and I think it's important to note that what Tom discovered, and because he wanted to just understand bipolar better, and that's where this started for him. And as he was doing his research, he found that people's bipolar switches are insanely predictable. They're almost exact. Like the occurrence of the bipolar switches was the same every year for each person. It almost like you could put it on a date. And he said that if it is the same, there has to be an outside influence of some sort that is enacting on this.
Okay, gotcha.
Because the pattern is there, because the pattern is predictable down to a T, that means something has to be an outside influence. So he knew it was there. And it was through the research and the case study that he did that he started to understand that all these people were sinking to the tides, but nobody fit it perfectly until they found this man, Michael. And Michael's story is that his bipolar was really difficult and nobody understood it. No medications really worked for it. And so then they eventually used light therapy, which is forcing you to stay still and non-moving during dark times and forcing you to stay active during light times and having to do that for months until your body readjusts itself back to its circadian rhythms. And it works, and you have to maintain that schedule. And it was some other scientist who did it with Michael, and then they let Michael go. And then these two scientists, Tom and this other guy, came together to discuss Michael and discuss all these things. And then they published this study. And the study goes pretty in depth with just how light therapy works, as well as just the patterns that they notice. But yeah, it literally, this Tom Weir, it's literally his life's work to discover this. And they figured it out right before the pandemic. And it does say in the study that they were going to be doing more research on this, but it was in 2018. So I almost just wonder if things got curtailed with the pandemic. And, you know,
right, because now everybody was depressed.
Yes.
Like, we can't sort out.
Yes.
Talk about external influences. Okay. I have many questions, and now I'm assigning you the role of expert on
this. Yeah, so I'll try my best.
Awesome. If not, totally cool. So I love that they were able to connect to some kind of a solution. That it sounds like the I forget what those lights are called, but like I have one because I'm aware that I have SAD and I drag that thing out and I put it on my desk and I, you know, and I have absolutely no idea if it helps or not, but like I do the thing, right?
Yeah, you still but do it.
This, you do the thing, which by the way is my entire life. It's like, I don't think this is helping. 20 years of yoga and I still want to have a baseball bat at hand at all times. So I don't know if this is working for me, but I'm doing the thing. Sorry.
No, that was great.
Anyway, put down the baseball bat. Hurry, put down the baseball bat. So I'm curious about where Michael is now. And now I almost feel like COVID is this unfair, talk about disruptors, that he might have reset his body clock, but now we don't know if it's like, quote unquote, a permanent fix, or if he notices when he is, I'm going to call it backsliding, but that sounds rude. You know, like if his cycles are starting to you know, kick in again, does he know to go back to this light therapy? Was there any follow-up on our friend Michael?
No. So from what I understand, Michael's stuff happened closer to like his resolution came early in the 2000s. And I'm pretty sure the reason that they are only calling him Michael is to have him remain anonymous. Because in all of these studies, they never say his last name ever. And so it did say that Michael has said that he's had to keep up with it, and the actual light therapy itself in the beginning was way more involved. It was him going with the specialist, sitting in a room for 8 hours, not being allowed to move and not being allowed to open his eyes, and like having to just stay there for 8 hours in a dark room, and having a scientist watching him and say, stop moving, don't open your eyes, you know, and him having to just do this for months and months until his body finally adjusted. And he did say, Michael did say that he has to stay on it. Like he is very strict about his sleep schedule, very strict about when he gets dark time. And so I don't know about backsliding, but it does seem that he understood he has to keep this reinforced. And if it, you know, if they released Michael in early 2000s, hopefully that means by the time of the pandemic hit, he had this down kosher for himself. But yeah, really interesting stuff.
That really is. So one of the things that I noticed, and I'm going to drag patterns back in, but not heavily, I promise. We've been talking this entire podcast about this idea of like change the energy and you change your life.
Yes.
So here we are again, looking at something where it seems, it seems hopeless. I remember when a friend of mine got her diagnosis after years of having all of these questions and not understanding, you know, what was continuously happening to her. And, it was always seeking answers, got the answer. She's bipolar. And it was almost worse for her because to her, it was like, I'm not going to say it was a death sentence, but it just felt like, great, now this is the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And who wants to know that they are not, they're not in control. And unfortunately, like the not in control thing, I feel like in Western medical and the Western civilization, like the control is like, well, here's a pill and that's how we're going to control it versus going back to like, what can the body actually accomplish with the right tools? But if you have bipolar, you're not going to naturally say, well, you know, I need to sit in a room quietly in a dark room for 8 hours.
Have somebody watch me to make sure I'm not moving.
Right. Stop it. You need one of those siblings who likes to like flick you. Stop it.
Exactly.
Okay. So here's another random thought. Do you think that you could, because you have ADHD, would this also fight against another cycle that's going on in your body? I mean, could you see yourself being able to sit still with your eyes closed for 8 hours?
Oh God, no. Especially the light therapy. Absolutely not. Like, I think the takeaway from this for me, because number one, it is important to note that people who have rapid cycling bipolar are also notoriously difficult to medicate, and that 9 times out of 10 across the board medications don't work, which for me makes sense because if you remember from the ADHD episode, no ADHD meds work. And all of my spirits have always told me, you can try meds again, but I don't know how effective that's going to be. So I think for me, it's more just the understanding that if we're just now understanding that tides, actual moon's gravitational pull, can affect bipolar, that there is so much more connection to this world with our mental health than we have any understanding of currently. And I think that's what's important for me is not, oh my gosh, can I do light therapy to start regulating myself? Because I can't. It's more, okay, the understanding that in the spring I'm getting less sleep, how can I start to combat that? You know, in the winter I'm starting to get more sleep, how can I combat that? Because when you view sleep as a side effect, you're just like, well, that's how it is. But if you view sleep as the cause, it's completely different. It changes the game.
Completely different.
Yeah. And so I think that's what's most important for me is just using this information to then start forming my own cycles and patterns and behaviors around that. Do I think light therapy would work for me? Probably not. I think my solution is probably more attuned with napping, you know, and just taking time throughout the day to nap more and then just waking up earlier.
We are very big fans of napping on this show.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to unpack that a little bit if we can.
Yeah.
So there's different levels, right? So the hope is always that there's some kind of a cure. And then you find out that lots of things don't have cures. What you do hopefully get is, maybe cycles of remission. Mm-hmm. You get a bucket full of tools that when things are going sideways, that if you can bring yourself to do it, because this is also one of the problems of having PTSD or CPTSD, or frankly, just, you know, any depressive state, is it gets really, really hard to help yourself.
Yes.
And to get yourself to, you know, you would feel better if only you would do X, Y, Z, but that hopelessness has come in and you're like, yeah, who cares anyway? Like, honestly, and you forget what remission feels like. Like your brain knows that there's the possibility of not feeling like this, and people can say it to you like, this is temporary, but it doesn't feel temporary in the moment.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's part of the depressive cycle for you?
I would agree. It is. And I think because I'm type 2, I really try and front load myself, that when I'm in a manic period, I'll be like, oh my gosh, like, let's try and start instilling better habits so that when the depressive period comes back around, maybe I have these habits more. Because right. I think having a plan of small things to do in the moment is really difficult for bipolar or just yeah. depression in general, because you're never going to know where your spoons are at, you know, and you're never going to know what you have the capacity for. So I think instead, what I've started to understand in the past few years is having routine that is varying levels of spoonage and varying levels of difficulty that I can fall back on instead does help. Where, okay, I don't know how to recenter myself, but sometimes a shower can help, and sometimes a shower can get me back in the mood. And so then it becomes right. about, oh, trying to get a shower in within the first 30 minutes of my day, if I can, you know, because then if I can do that, I will set myself up for success better. And then, you know, starting to do yoga, which obviously is shifting more into like patterns that behaviors that disrupt these patterns. But yeah, I think, you know, allowing yourself to create small things that you just reinforce and repeat is a lot more effective. It's still challenging as hell. Like, oh my gosh, oh, yeah. still insanely difficult, but there's more hope with it. There's more doability yeah. with it.
Right. So I'm PTSD and CPTSD and a lifelong depressive. And yeah. who knows if the depression was there before or if it was, you know, part and parcel of the childhood trauma. So that said, I don't have bipolar. Although I remember my sister at one point, she was like, Trey, like, are we sure you don't? Because I was such a master overrider. You know, I'm always joking, overachiever in all things, that I would be working 70 and 80 hour work weeks. And the only way to, and never, ever taking days off. I mean, hypervigilism, right? The coping mechanism that is workaholism. Sorry, one second. Let me, and now my brain is going off squirrel in this direction. Come back. The only way to achieve all the things that I was achieving was to basically circumvent my nervous system and to force it into an overdrive.
Yeah.
And it ended up looking like mania, because I really wasn't sleeping. I've gone through a couple of, I mean, I've never slept, started when I was like 25. And then there would be periods where like, I really, really, really didn't sleep. And then sometimes it would be a little better, not cycles. These were not attached to the gravitational pull of, it was attached to my own, anxiety.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what was happening there was, I was firing up my own adrenals. And you know, when you don't have any tools to be able to turn the volume back down on that stuff, like obviously you're not going to sleep because you're just fired up like all the time. And it could end up looking like mania because you're just churning out the work, man. And she was like, golly, is that what's going on here? And it ended up being, no, it was me committing a very slow suicide
yeah.
in the way that a lot of people with PTSD do. And thank goodness I finally did start connecting to some of the tools that was able to get me back in control-ish. And I bring all this up, A, just to relate it to other people who are listening, who, you know, who feel like they do have cycles off and on, but is it mania? Is it not mania? Here's an alternative. I'm having a hard time getting back to the question that I wanted to ask you. Okay, here it is. You can edit all this out so I sound less scattered than I am, damn it. So I have tools that help me manage my mental illnesses at this point, and I have gotten to the point where I get to be in remission. Which is astonishing, because once you hit remission, once you know what like some peace of mind feels like that becomes the drug. Yeah. And you will do, just like Michael, you will do anything to like get back to being in that feeling where you aren't, you know, burying yourself with your own grave dirt. So would any of my tools that I use also apply over here, or is it something different entirely?
The answer is a little more complicated. I think yes, but is probably the answer. Because number one, you know, going back to Tom Weir's study for a second, the thing he outlined is that it is not identical anywhere across the board, and that everybody's cycles with the tides will be a little different. They'll be the same for that person, but it will be different. And I will also say, as a 26-year-old who had a very traumatic upbringing internally, I have not spent a lot of time in remission. I haven't. I don't even know if I've felt it yet, you know. And just with the journey that I've been on these past few months, I am starting to understand better that I have spent a lot of time cycling in and out of addiction. And because my addiction is food and weed and, like, you know, other things that aren't going to ruin my life, I was able to freely cycle in and out of those addictions without consequence.
Yeah. High functioning, they call it.
Yeah. And, you know, food is absolutely an addiction, but it is not an addiction that is going to cost you your friends and your relationship. It is just going to cost you your health down the line. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm still understanding what my tools are in myself. And I will also put this amazing star and asterisk for everybody listening. I still have yet to go to therapy as an adult. And I know that that's going to be a game changer for me. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what my strategies are enough to know how your strategies are going to help me. But knowing what I know about people's and brains, there's no way it's going to directly correlate, you know, like it might help a little bit, especially because I'm type 2. So I consider myself a depressed person. And, you know, when I'm in the depression, it feels like my head's above under the waves. And then when I get to the mania, yeah, it feels like my head's finally poking back out for a second. And so then I'm scrambling, being like, what can I do when my head's out of this water? It might be a good thing for us to return to, because I'm just now starting to get to the point where I actually want to swim in these waves and understand how they work better and stop being so reactionary. I would say my deities have gently and not so gently been pushing me down that path. But in doing so, it's been very volatile and very like abrasive and violent. So yeah.
Yeah. Which is something I want to come back around to. But first, so in my own kind of light research into bipolar, when my friend got her diagnosis, I felt like it was time to start educating myself a mm-hmm. little bit in this space so I can learn how better to support her. And one of the things that I read about it is that it's often caused by childhood trauma. So this idea that there are people, and please know, neither of us have been not to medical doctors. School. We're not doctors. We research heavily, and we try to be faithful messengers of the people who did go to medical school, because we're trying to apply it to our own lives, right? Yeah. We're trying to understand ourselves and our situations. So the thinking is I think I grew up very much in the school of thought that you were born with these things and it was a brain chemistry thing. And therefore we're going to change the brain chemistry and that ought to, you know, create some traction. And we did have an episode where we talked about this. So let's, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have to go back and revisit, you know, the evolution of medications around depression. But I think everybody thought that, you know, schizophrenia and bipolar were these two things that were the far extreme end of, you know, mental illness. Yes. And that you were born with it. And if you're, you know, if you had it in the family, that chances are you were going to have it. And I'm not saying that's not, you know, I think, right, because causality, right? Yeah. You know, like if you had four generations of people with schizophrenia, then yes, it's something you're going to pay attention to in yourself, especially if you're a young man. I can't count how many undergraduate, well, let's not romanticize it. There were a number of young men that I taught at, you know, at the undergraduate level who expressed to me that there was schizophrenia in their family and they were terrified of, you know, showing symptoms and they couldn't wait to turn 25. Like it was this, it was like a ticking clock in them. And part of it is because there's, you know, quote unquote, no treatment.
Yeah.
There's, well, you know, well, this is your life now, and hopefully you don't end up on the streets and you don't end up in jail, et cetera. Now there's also, you know, levels of how adverse and extreme these things can be.
Yes.
But I think anytime you have people who are really depressed to the point where, you know, suicidal ideation is now part of that cycle, it's always a danger, right? Yeah. So that said, they're now thinking that it's actually childhood trauma that is one of the, so you can have the genes and the epigenetics for it. But if you had really great parents, you know, if you had Joaquin Phoenix and come on raising you in a gentle parenting, then you had a far greater chance of not triggering all of this stuff. Have you come across any of that research?
No, but I can, you know, hop off my research for a second and just speak from my own experience and say,
yes, please.
I feel like what's interesting to me about mental health, and one of the things that's always been my fascination with it and why it's my lifelong love, is because what makes it unique person to person is all of these wires and strings that cross, you know, where it's like, yeah, my family was predisposed on my dad's side to have bipolar. All of my siblings on my dad's side have it. My dad has it. So it was predisposed. At the same time, my bipolar did not kick off until my gender dysphoria kicked off. You know, I can vividly remember a point in my life where mentally I was okay. I also think things didn't start getting rough with my mom until late elementary school, early middle school. And I always want to put the onus on myself for that, but I was a kid, so I probably shouldn't. So
not your fault.
Yeah. And you know, ADHD and bipolar are these two things that are so different and separate, yet for me, they are so intertwined. And when they're also together, they can also present the same exact symptoms as borderline personality disorder. So my point with what I'm saying is I feel like if you're just looking at one thing in a person, you can't find the answer, you know, but if you're looking at, oh, it's bipolar combined with childhood trauma, combined with ADHD, combined with gender dysphoria, it creates a lot more clear of a picture of how these systems work. You know, it's like trying to find the chicken or the egg, which came first. Is it biological? Is it sociological? And the answer has to be both. It can't just be one or the other. You know, I think it has to have an element of both for people before it starts to make sense on an individual level. You know, like the whole point of these illnesses being a spectrum, the whole point of gender being a spectrum, is you can't put one person into a box that you can put someone else in. You have to go on their level and understand how their systems work. So it does make sense to me that it's not just going to be purely biological, that, you know, if I had a gentler upraising, maybe I wouldn't be afflicted with it so badly. You know, maybe my ADHD wouldn't have been such an affliction if I didn't have gender dysphoria. You know, like, who knows? But like, yeah, definitely.
Therapy is going to be fun for you.
Yeah.
You know, we make the joke on the show that knowing is half the battle. Go Joe.
Go Joe.
But go Joe. That once you start connecting to the actual information that you're like, yeah, yeah, that this feels like me. This feels right. Oh, and I'm doing it because of these things. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, like YouTube is your friend.
Yeah.
You can find so much information out there that really explains yourself to yourself. But not everybody is in the intersectionality of it. And then I would take it even one step further and say there's also a spiritual component in all of this.
Yes, I would agree.
Which is, so the place I study is called the Boulder Psychic Institute. And by the way, I am 1 month away from completing what would be the equivalent of a master's degree. So yay me,
yay.
I found myself. I stuck it out. Even though there were growth periods in there where you're learning things about the universe and about yourself, where you're just, oh God, no more, no more. It's too much. But the saying there is, you know, as above, so below. So as your spiritual self is working, it's going to have a huge influence on the meat suit, on the 3D, you know, the material world. And I do put a lot of what we've been talking about, you know, very much couched in the body and the brain, the mind and the emotional cycles. But then if you bring in the spiritual thing, it can be a real game changer because there's a whole other array of tools. And I'm not just talking about meditation. Meditation is like the gateway where you just finally start relaxing enough to start bringing in information and to start letting your body untangle itself enough so it can actually start healing. Because this is, you know, the big issue is that if our nervous system never calms down, then it can't sleep, it can't heal, it can't do these things. So I would say that the spiritual, by studying all the spiritual stuff and all the psychic stuff, that has been probably 70% of what has allowed me to start experiencing extended remissions.
Yeah.
Does it protect me from never triggering again? Hopefully one day, you know, one day, that would be nice. And that's the goal. But meanwhile, I at least get to have half of the month not depressed. And then the goal is try to extend all of that out. But again, it's the spiritual tools and it's recognizing that there's past lives that have these influences. So as epigenetics goes ancestrally, you know, along our birth lines, there's also past lives that have like a ton of influence that we're bringing things forward that we never reconciled and resolved in those previous lives. And guess what? We get to keep working it here. And ask any spiritual person or healing sort, or even an astrologer. It looks like the world is on fire, but it's actually also, in addition to being on fire, an amazing time where more healing can get done than ever before because we are breaking through. So I'm excited for you to start working some of these other pathways because I think that you're going to get through the healing so much faster than previous generations were able to. Yay. So yay. Let's get you that job. Capitalism.
Well, and I know we're hitting the time here a little bit, but I did want to just say my healing journey very much began with witchcraft, you know, where I transitioned. And then a year after that, I got into witchcraft as soon as the pandemic lifted, because it never lifted, but like, you know, as soon as the social distancing lifted a little bit. And yeah, it has been truly through practice and through witchcraft and through rituals and getting connected to my two lovely, amazing deities who have just given me so much that I've been able to do all this work. And finally, I'm starting to uncover all of this. And it is happening faster. And because of that, it's also so ego killing, you know, it's like tearing your skin off with a potato peeler sometimes, where you're just like, oh my God, I can't, yes. I see why this took lives and lives and lives to get through, because this freaking sucks. This is terrible. But yeah, I agree. And you know, the spiritual has to factor in when you're thinking about how to disrupt these patterns, because we are extraterrestrial beings living in a human experience. Mm-hmm. And that has to be factored in, but yeah.
Yep. So now is the time. If there is inclination to clearing karma, which I would love to do an episode on.
Yeah, just talking about I have so much freaking karma to clear.
Karma.
Yes.
Well, we all do, but some of us more than others, because we came in saying, you know what, if this is going to be a big disruptive healing lifetime on this planet, in this plane of existence, then I'm going to get all the things done. Like, I'm going to bring all the crap with me and just see. Good luck. Either you're going to, you know, you're going to perish because you can't take the load, or you're going to connect to significant healing. But yeah, there's so many other influences happening outside of this realm. And if you're willing to acknowledge that and to start clearing also on, you know, because we have all these etheric bodies working above and outside of the physical body, and they all are part of the trapping of the energies and the entities and the things that are interfering with us. So as always, it's all of these different levels. And for me personally, it was working all the different levels that I finally feel like, and who knows, maybe it's just a cycle. I'm not in a depressive cycle. So I'm like, above the wall.
Yay.
I'm just not depressed. Go, go, go. So I could relate to you on that. But during those, you know, those, the up cycles, yeah, you better believe I'm getting stuff done, because I don't know how long this is going to last. I don't know if I'm a tide person or not, but maybe I should start paying attention.
Yeah. Look at the tides.
Right on. There's got to be an app for that, right?
I mean, now there will be. Hope maybe we'll start it.
Yeah. That'd be amazing if people could at least see and understand the things, you know, that do cause the, I'm going to call it triggering, even though it's not quite that, but like, you know, kicks off the cycle. And you know, PTSD is different because like, you never know what, like you smell something and that's it. Like, boom, you're toast.
Yeah.
Because you smelled the wrong darn thing and your brain went into protective mode. But still, there's tools. Mm-hmm. Jenny, thank you so much for sharing your story and your research. I learned so much today. I hope our listeners learned a bunch today.
Thanks for letting me hijack this episode a little bit, and because I found something interesting and I was like, oh, this would be a great episode. So yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for all of
it. So is this a Gen Z thing that you're carrying over from Gen X, where we apologize for things that there's no reason to apologize for?
I will say this. Everybody in my circle, except for my one cis man friend, apologizes excessively for things that they don't need to be apologizing for. So I think, yes, I think... You know, I was so used to apologizing to my Gen X parent, and so are the rest of us, that we're just I don't mean that in a bad way, Gen Xers. I love you, Mom. But
we know who we are. And we know who we raised.
Oopsie. <Our bad.
sighs> Well, on that note, my dear, thank you so much. Always a delight to talk to you.
Yeah,
we'll
thank
see
you.
See you next week.
Yes, and as always, cheers, meow, meow.
Cheers, meow, meow.